Last Wednesday, a press conference was held at the Iowa State House in Des Moines by the Iowa chapter of the United Spinal Association, and it signaled a new level of grassroots organizing for disability rights in Iowa. At KHOI, we weren't able to make it to the press conference in Des Moines, but a member of this new advocacy group, Jen Wolf from Waverly, explained. Here's Jen describing the conference.
There were 17, and 10 of us were wheelchair users, all in one spot. 10 wheelchair users you will never see in Iowa, which there's never really been a for the people, by the people, disability community advocacy group before.
So is this advocacy group something new?
Yes.
The press conference was partly held because of the creation of this advocacy group?
Yes. It's the advocacy group of Iowa chapter of United Spinal Association and the first event at the Capitol. We're really trying to change legislators' minds. It feels like legislators and society still look at people with disabilities as sick or a cost to the system. You know, so many people still use wheelchair bound. And we're not bound by our wheelchairs. Our wheelchairs actually give us freedom. And we're trying to change that focus.
Is there anything happening right now that is causing people more concern than usual?
In 2015, Governor Branstad switched Medicaid to privatization, which means that it went from where the Department of Human Services of Iowa was managing Medicaid for Iowa. They decided it would be more cost-effective to have outside insurance groups called managed care organizations manage those people under Medicaid. And at first, there were three managed care organizations that took over in 2017. The population that was getting Medicaid got split between those three groups. And it was done very quickly and without a lot of forethought, which is part of the concern. One of them had to drop out because they couldn't afford to keep giving care. And now we have another group that's joining in July.
They're essentially insurance companies?
Yes. And they're supposed to be managing care, which for most healthy people, you have more wiggle room, what they really need versus what our population needs. We're trying to start a campaign, and it's hashtag upgrade Medicaid, because not that the whole program needs to change, but there's certain aspects of it that need to change. And so we're trying to bring attention to those aspects.
So you're saying whether it was intentional or not, the disabled community was singled out as getting less care?
Yes, making it very, very difficult to get the right level of care. It's not that the whole thing needs to change. Part of Medicaid is working well, especially if you have a good case manager. But for a lot of the people with long-term support services, which is a majority of the disability community, they're having issues because they keep trying to cut waiver services that they get, hours of care. They're getting denials of care. Plus, people don't want a job of personal care attendants that help provide those cares.
Could you go through the issues one by one and explain in detail exactly what they mean? I think the first one was waiver services.
Waiver services, many times, especially for people with physical disabilities, allows the state, or in this case the MCO, to pay for home care for the person to be able to stay at home. Waiver services pay for personal care attendants to come in and do assistance. You have to apply to get on waiver services. And then there's several different waivers. You can get a physical disability waiver. You can get a brain injury waiver. I think there's a developmental delay.
So what's being waived is the personal liability to pay for this?
Yes.
That the state pays for the service?
Yes, and because it would be more expensive to have that person live in an institution. Typically, a person who has a cervical injury who's a quadriplegic. Use a power chair, so they don't really have functional or minimal function of their hands. They need help getting out of bed in the morning and showering and getting dressed. But usually after that point, they usually have systems or things worked out where they don't really need help the rest of the day. and then they just need somebody in at the end of the day, an hour or two, to help them get to bed. And if they don't have that personal care attendant to do that, they lay in bed all day. And many of these people are trying to work, are trying to raise families, are volunteering their time, and so they don't just sit around at home anyway. It prevents them from working, participating in life.
These waiver services, are they mostly for people that basically need help starting and ending the day, or are there other type of waiver services?
There's other types. I have another friend that's more high functioning, and some of them only get 3 to 4 hours a week. And it's usually to help with the heavier cleaning in their homes or getting outside the home and going grocery shopping and some other things. And then if somebody who's brain injured, it might be 20 hours a day where, you know, they're really helping people stay safe. Sometimes they're still intelligent, but they may not have a filter or have the best judgment. And so you need a level of supervision.
So that they don't do dangerous things.
Yes.
These waiver services are being denied?
For a few of our people that I've talked to personally, the managed care organizations that have taken over Medicaid have tried to cut their services in half.
So waiver services is one of three issues that you were addressing at the press conference.
Another issue is denial of care.
Explain a scenario where that might happen.
Okay. The MCOs, the managed care organizations, which are basically insurance companies, are trying to make money, which I understand. It's a business. I know of two instances of people in Iowa who have continued to have to fight for, one of them has to keep fighting for MRIs and blood work. She's had chronic spinal cord tumors. And so this is her third time going through everything. So she has a record that this is happening, and her doctors are saying she needs to have an MRI, but the insurance company is saying, no, she can't have it done. And so these people are sick, and they're having to use any energy that they have fighting the system to get the care that their doctors want them to have.
So this is a scenario that most people can relate to.
Yes.
You need the insurance company to pay for something, and they're just refusing to pay for it.
Yes. And our community has such frail health a lot of times anyway that this is a big concern.
Because a lot of times the person just can't pay for it.
No, definitely.
Is it a big problem in Iowa?
We're unsure of how big it is because it's very difficult. People are so used to self-advocating for themselves, and so they use their energy just to do that, and they don't realize that they should be letting their lawyer or their legislators know, that mm-hmm. they should be letting their community know, but mm-hmm. it's hard to judge. Just in the week or two that we did outreach, we got 9 stories mm-hmm. of people having difficulties that we're willing to share.
So we've talked about waiver of services and denial of care. And then the last issue that you had mentioned of importance at the press conference was home health care needs, or the need for more home health care professionals. Could you explain that?
There's a huge deficit of care attendants in Iowa, and with the aging population, there's a huge concern about that and finding qualified people that are willing to work. We have such low employment in Iowa, there just aren't people to fill those jobs. And at 9 to 11 hours, people don't want that type of job, that type of stress. And this is not technically unskilled care for many of these people. It's, you know, for quadriplegics, it is helping do transfers and showering and things that need good eyes on how to prevent falls so there's no broken bones, or looking at skin to make sure there's not breakdown, which cause pressure sores. It could be very problematic if the right people aren't keeping track.
Was there any other aspect of this that were of concern in terms of what's happening? The waiver services, the home health care, and the denial of care?
Those are kind of the big issues. We weren't going to do a specific policy for our advocacy event, but the 2 weeks ahead of time, we were alerted to a bill in the House and in the Senate trying to take the long-term support systems, which is our population, out of the privatization and back, the state would be back in control. But neither one of those made it through the funnel. But we still think it's important that an idea like that would be more beneficial for our population.
Can you say that again? Because I didn't completely follow what you said.
Sure. And again, it's so complicated, understandable. So you think of long-term support systems as that's the support systems that help people stay in their homes versus having to go into an institution or a nursing home. Those people have been the most affected with the privatization of Medicaid. And so that group versus, say, healthier, lower-income people are doing okay with Medicaid the way it is. The long-term support services community ideally should be taken out of the managed care organization care, because the state used to be in control and manage everything.
To manage that again.
Yes.
That bill came before the legislature?
It was in the Senate, in the House, in committee, but it didn't make it through the first funnel.
Is there anything else at stake? Are there any bills that could potentially come before the floor?
It could still potentially get brought up by leadership or added to another bill as an amendment. And so we're hoping to bring enough attention to it that it still gets some debate. But it's doubtful that anything will happen this year. But we're hoping, again, to bring enough awareness that they know that it needs to be on their radar and that it can affect election campaigns. We had a gentleman who was there videoing some stories because they want to help bring awareness to our communities and our legislators that it's an investment. It's not a cost of the system. We see it as you're investing in us, and then we can give back. We are working. We are volunteering. We're raising families. We want to give back, but we can't give back unless we have adequate care and support system.
Is that what you said at the press conference?
I'm not on Medicaid anymore, but I think advocacy is so important. And as soon as anybody in my community starts saying, help me, I'm doing everything I can to keep living my life, and this is keeping me from doing that, that concerns me. My goal with this group is to build a community that empowers each other to find their voices and help create change for themselves and for our community.
So this is really a grassroots organization among people who are being affected by this.
Yes.
Why do you think this should matter to Iowa residents?
One of our fellow advocates said this yesterday in the press conference. At any moment, you can step outside your house and have a stroke, or get hit by a car, get in a bike accident, and become disabled. Anyone that can happen to. And then you have to deal with the things that we have to deal with, or a family member, or a friend. It really concerns everybody that values humanity.
What I hear you saying is this is an issue that affects all of us, whether we know it or not.
And if we don't get the certain level of care, it's not an entitlement. It's the fact that it's going to cost the government more if we start having more health problems because they can't help us stay at home. So we're either going to end up in the hospital or institution and cost more. And so we're trying to be, you know, responsible citizens at the same time.
For the public good.
Definitely.
And how long has this advocacy group existed now?
Since the beginning of the year.
And what prompted this?
You know, there have been a lot of people who've done advocacy work on their own before, strong individuals, but there's never truly been a disability group that comes together and works together to create systemic change. And I've been advocating in D.C. for 10 years and had never gotten outreach from other people. 2 years ago, we started hearing from our members for the first time wanting to get involved in advocacy all of a sudden because of the Medicaid privatization. I had outreach from other people going, okay, what can I do? I can't stand this anymore. And so we decided it's time to gather our community as well as hopefully build a coalition with other disability groups to fight for changes to Medicaid, as well as any other disability policy that pops up.
Thank you, Jen Wolf from Waverly, Advocacy Chair of the new Advocacy Committee of the Iowa Chapter of United Spinal Association and advocating at the Iowa Capitol on Wednesday of this week. Could you describe the United Spinal Association for us?
Okay. It is a group. They've been around for 15 years. It's a nonprofit, and it was created out of the need to build a community for those people who do use wheelchairs. It started off as just spinal cord injury, but United Spinal is actually for basically anybody who has a mobility issue and uses a wheelchair, because we all deal with kind of the same issues. We have over 300 members across the state, and it's growing.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks to Jen Wolf from Waverly for that report from the United Spinal Associations. More information about the United Spinal Association can be found at unitedspinal.org.